But first, family relationships and parenting plans. Family law changes dating from 2006 require separating families to attend counselling to reach agreement on a parenting plan. If parents can't agree, the next step is mediation. The aim is to promote equal responsibility for the care of children and ideally to reduce the number of families who end up in the family court. Family relationship centres deliver this counselling, so 3 years on, is the new system producing better outcomes for the families who attend? A new study has looked at the effectiveness of a family relationship centre at Frankston in Victoria. The author of the study is Professor Thea Brown from Monash University, who joins me now. Hi, Thea.
Hello, Jane. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good.
Can you briefly outline the scope of your study? Like, how did you measure the effectiveness of the centre?
Well, it was a study that took place over 3 years, from the time the centre was first thought about to over 3 years later, and we did a number of things to try and decide how successful or otherwise the centre was. The main instrument that we used was to survey clients, to survey all the clients over a two-year period, and also to then phone them back 6 to 12 months later and see how things were going 6 to 12 months later. The kind of outcome indicators that we used were, on the one hand, how successful the parents, the adults, thought that the service was, and then we also looked at how successful it was in terms of the government's aims, and the government's aims were to introduce a sort of a cultural shift in parents thinking about their parenting after separation, and also to what extent they could settle their disputes at the Family Relationship Centre and avoid then going on to either the Federal Magistrates Court or the Family Court. And certainly the study on the Frankston and Mornington Peninsula Family Relationship Centre showed that it was very successful, and more successful than the average that was established nationally in the study done by the Australian Institute of Family Studies, which came out just a few months ago.
Right, and you sort of developed three case studies out of your research too, didn't you, or your study?
Well, we actually did quite a lot of case studies, and we got a lot of information from parents about their particular situation. We looked at mothers and fathers. We didn't go direct to children, and we also had a number of grandparents participating.
And the three case studies that you cite in your report,
yes,
they're not real families, though. They represent three family types and specific issues that you felt were worth concentrating on.
That's right. They are common issues that the families brought, but they're not real families, but they are made up from real families. But nobody could look at that and say, well, that's me. Mm-hmm. But they could think, well, there are elements of that family that sound rather like me, and in a sense they'd be right. But what we wanted to do was show people what the families were like who wanted to come to the Family Relationship Centre and who had to come to the Family Relationship Centre, and what they said about the centre and how they progressed through the services, which, as you mentioned, had a counselling component, had a mediation component, and had an educational component as well.
And your research focused on the Family Relationship Centre in Frankston, but would other family relationship centres around the country operate in a similar way? Do they all follow a similar program and have to conform to the same federal guidelines?
It's a good question, and the answer is not straightforward. The government, when they developed the notion of family relationship centres, left quite a lot of how the centre was to function to the individual centre. They laid down guidelines and constraints and requirements, but in terms of what the agency did with the families, they left a lot up to the centre, and that was one of the challenges for every centre around Australia, to try and develop their own program that suited their own locality. And what Frankston had to contend with was that it was an area which was known to have a high incidence of domestic violence and child abuse and a low participation rate in both secondary and tertiary education, and yet the centre was to offer counselling and mediation, which are normally associated with more middle-class areas. So it had to develop ways of tailoring these programs to the local area, and each centre around Australia has developed its own ways of tailoring programs for its own locality. But where Frankston, I think, took a very different route from other centres was it was built on a philosophy of empowering the clients to negotiate. It really was looking at helping them get control of their lives, not just now, but for the future, because bringing up children, whether you're separated or whether you're not, is a very long-term project or life work, you might say.
Indeed. Yet you talked about high rates of domestic violence and child abuse in an area like Frankston, but critics say that mediation's not effective in dealing with family violence. What's your view about that?
I think that it can be and it can't be, and it depends on a lot of things. One of the things that the Frankston and Mornington Peninsula Centre did, which is different from other centres with clients with family violence, was that it tried to offer them all the services of the centre even when the families clearly were not going to go through a mediation process, that they were ultimately probably going to go to court, so that all the pre-mediation education, the empowerment philosophy, the information about service systems in the locality, they included those families in those sort of 4 hours of pre-mediation preparation. They had originally not realised that that was a good idea. They started off not doing that, but then they realised that these families were missing out so much that they really needed this information, support and education. So they kept them in the service system and helped direct them through the service system, which many family relationship centres have not done. They have sort of assessed you and either moved you into their mediation service or they've given you a certificate of exemption and left it to you to go on to the next step of your own accord. But I think it's really important to keep people with family violence included in the service system, even if they're not using all the services that the Family Relationship Centre offers. The centre also had quite a good relationship with local family law solicitors and the local community legal centre and the local legal aid. And I think that also was very important for families where family violence existed. And that proportion of those families is quite high in this area.
I'm talking to Professor Thea Brown, Department of Social Work at Monash University and author of What About the Children? Parenting Post-Separation and Divorce. Allegations of domestic violence are also a factor when the legislation emphasises shared care, taken by many to mean a 50-50 time split. Is that what counsellors and parents expect, and how difficult is it then to negotiate alternative arrangements?
Parents did find this a very major issue because it was a huge change in the culture of post-separation parenting. For some people it was a huge hurdle and it became a major problem for mediators to explain what the legislation meant and what the limitations of the law were in that respect, because the law did not actually specify nor intend to say that every child must spend equal time with each parent. Rather, they were suggesting that in some circumstances this might be a goal to be aimed for. And so this sort of notion that it was compulsory was something that had to be dealt with. But also, the centre had to educate parents on the fact that if it was possible, it will be desirable for both parents to be involved in their children's lives after separation and to be involved as much as possible.
And family law changed, didn't it, originally, with the goal of shared care rather than the idea that after divorce one parent wins and the other one loses. Does your study suggest that separating parents have in fact got a different mindset now?
Yes, it does. It does show that they have been able to change and that they say that they have changed, and their comments indicate that they have changed. But 67% of the parents surveyed said that the services at the centre had made them look at their relationships with their former partner and with their children quite differently. So I think that it is possible to achieve a change in thinking about parenting post-separation and to appreciate that most commonly, it's better for both parents to be able to work together in the care of their children for their best welfare. It's rendering children more vulnerable if they lose the care from one or other parent.
Thank you very much, Thea, for that update on what's happening with those changes, and lovely to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Jane.
That was Professor Thea Brown, Department of Social Work, Monash University, and the author of What About the Children? Parenting, Post-Separation and Divorce.